Welcome to Overtures. This episode was very special as I got to catch up with a theater camp friend who I literally hadn't spoken to since my senior year of high school. She's doing wonderful things in life. Please send her all the good vibes as she continues law school. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly.
Sunday, y'all. Happy Sunday. I don't know about you guys, but yesterday in New York City was so cold, so frigid. We thought that spring was here. Yesterday proved it was not. Hopefully today will be the beginning of a little bit warmer weather. but yeah, happy Sunday. Hope everyone's doing well. Today is episode 21. I know it's been a little bit of a hot second since an episode. Things have been busy, things have been wild, but that's okay. We're here, we're back, and we have another episode. So today's episode 21, and my guest today is a playwright slash producer turned law student who isn't quite sure where her life is going next. She and I actually know each other from the high school times. Not that we went to high school together, though. You'll figure that out in a bit. But we haven't been able to catch up for a very long time, so I'm very excited for this. She is very funny, talented, and as well as very smart. This is Catherine Duclos.
Hi.
Hi. It's so good to see you. I know we were just gushing about this earlier, but it's so nice to get to catch up with people. And I guess that's a good segue into how do we know each other? I always try and introduce that to give people context at the beginning of the show. And we know each other from theater camp.
Yeah.
High school theater camp. I'm even wearing the St. Olaf like sweatshirt to rep today. But yeah, specifically St. Olaf camp in Minnesota. I know I went to their summer camp for 2 years, but I forget. I know, had you gone like years prior to me?
No, I also only went 2 years.
Yeah, I think we at the same time.
Yeah. Because I remember I loved the first year and I loved the mm-hmm. second year too, but I didn't necessarily, I wasn't going to go a third year. It just didn't work out with.
No, that's fair. Right. Because I think you're a year younger than me. Because I know for me, it was like I went the summer before senior year and the summer after senior year.
Mm-hmm. And I was summer before junior and summer after junior. So
that makes sense then. Yeah, that makes sense. But also something that I didn't realize, but it makes sense being that the two of us makes sense for the two of us. But we've also both worked at theater camps. Now, I was a counselor at Interlochen, and so I was working with kids like outside of the classroom, making sure they behaved in the cabin, did their chores, weren't drowning each other, etc. But what was your experience like working at camps? Were they also overnight or day camps?
They were both day camps. In Duluth, what happened was I was in a production of Mamma Mia, and Amber, the absolutely wonderful children's theater director at the North Shore Theater, said, "Have you ever worked with kids?" And I said, kind of. And she's like, "Do you want to work with kids this summer?" And I was like,
You're like, "I guess."
I guess. And actually, it was a great opportunity because if you did a summer show, the kids' camps, like I'd work them in the morning and then I would have rehearsals at night. And it was perfect. And then during the school year, I just work like the Saturday camps. And that worked with like rehearsals and everything else that, okay, I can just do an hour every Saturday, get a little pocket change. The other camp I worked at was this past summer, COVID, you know, all that happened. I'd been working at a restaurant and I was going to law school in the fall. And I was like, I just want to be outside for the summer and work with kids.
Yeah.
And there was a theater specialist position open at Camp Butwin, which is this Jewish summer camp in the cities. Everyone was welcome. It was more like, you know, like there was one class a week about like Jewish culture and stuff like that.
Right.
Maybe, sing some songs. But I did theater with the kids all that summer. And they were both different experiences because that one was outdoors and the delivery one was indoors, except when we snuck outside for lunch. But I just doing theater with kids is, it's just nice. Like, they tire you out, but it's nice.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, because I mean, okay, so I did work at Interlochen, which it was like fully like you are like, in the woods, camp style, like, et cetera, et cetera. Like you're living with the kids. It's 6 weeks long. It's insane. But like, I also did like it was a camp called Art Ventures in my hometown. And like, the kids would like rotate between their like selected classes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there was one summer where I like helped teach like improv, but like yeah. improv with like kindergarten through third graders only can go so far. Yeah. I mean, granted, like we worked with like all throughout elementary age, but like it can get exhausting. Mm-hmm. So like keeping their attention for that long, especially maybe like if you're the only like person in the room who's leading them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exhausting, but it's also really rewarding when you can see like how much fun they're having with it. And you're like, yes, I'm doing the thing.
That was, we had like older kids at Camp Butwin, and opposed to Duluth, where those kids signed up for theater camp. That's what they wanted to do. I was just one class out of many at Camp Butwin. And some kids, you know, they don't want to do theater. Like they're here for the sports, the swimming, that stuff. It was fun to see some of the older kids who, I'm guessing the previous person didn't do as much improv. It was more just performances. These kids being told they get to make jokes.
Yeah.
That they get to be silly. That they don't get to say anything inappropriate, but they can do whatever they want. And that getting to see them actually enjoy it and be surprised by enjoying it was a really rewarding experience.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, and even just like thinking of like theater games and improv games, I feel like that was like the quintessential like experience of like our theater campus as well, just because like with St. Olaf, like you were living on the campus what I think it was like maybe like 10 days total or like something to that effect. But I even remember like one of the first days, it was like, oh, what is it called, like park bench, and we were like all like the people who had been there
all the time,
the people that would like had been there several years prior would like immediately be like, okay, let's play a game, we're done with lunch but we haven't started classes yet, and then bring out like the boxes and we just play park bench. And that would turn so absurd so quickly, but like again, it's like practicing those like really goofy skills.
And that's park bench and bang are now staples in the Duluth children's theater company. I brought them from camp and it's just, they love them. It's just,
it's so fun. It's so fun. And I think what was really cool about like our camp experience is that like we had like all that time to like be goofy and do stuff like that, but we also had time to like go learn how to like hold us like a stage sword, or like we also like were assigned our particular like show, or like worked on our like musical theater thing or whatever. Like it was a little bit of everything.
Yes, that was fun.
It was so wonderful. But yeah, love a good theater camp moment. But yeah, Catherine, how did you first get started in theater?
My first thing I ever did was I got to be in the children's chorus of Godspell at my church. And I wasn't necessarily a good actress, but I was good at memorizing. So I got to have lines in one section. And unfortunately, I had a lisp at the time, and I got to give the "A thower went to thow some seed. And as he thowed, some seed fell in the soil." And that may have been intentional by the director looking back at it. but my mom said, because she wanted me to try everything. She didn't know what I like as a kid, like tried soccer, ice skating, all this stuff. That was the only thing she said I woke her up for. Everything else she had to wake me up to go to. And I was like, "Mom, we have to go to rehearsal at the church," or whatever.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And then it just kept going from there.
It just kept snowballing after that.
Yeah.
How young were you when you like started doing that, like elementary school?
I think that was first grade. And my school did like a play every year in elementary school, but that was like everyone sang all the songs and we all had one line, you know, like that kind of stuff. And then it was in middle school. Well, in fifth grade, I did a show at the community theater. I got to be Gracie Shin in Music Man, had three lines, had a great time. But in middle school, I didn't know if I wanted to keep doing it. I auditioned for the dinner theater last minute because our middle school did a dinner theater. You know, the poor parents getting these terrible middle school meal like before the show.
Wait, the middle schoolers were making the dinner?
We didn't make the dinner, but the tech crew was also the wait staff. They served it. It was very cute.
Like iconic.
I think there was just one show in high school I wasn't in. Like after that, I just did all of them. And
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love that. I love that so much. And then obviously you went to, you got your bachelor's degree in theater. Was there any particular like light bulb moment that you were like, oh, this is what I want to do by going into theater?
Well, I do remember I got my like, I always wanted to be an actress. That's what I wanted to do. I get to UMD. I'm taking these classes, and I knew I always wanted to do it, but I just started to realize that I love all of theater and entertainment. It wasn't necessarily, I realized I don't think I could have dealt with the rejection of auditions and all of that. And there's
absolutely,
I didn't think that would be good for me. And then I took a playwriting class sophomore year, and I absolutely loved it. And then I slowly started to learn about all these other things. And, I produced a production of 24-hour plays my senior year. And I wasn't quite sure where I was going. I was like, I'll apply for casting internships, was looking in Playwright Center for that summer. And then COVID hit, and I got emails from all of them, was like, thank you for applying. This no longer exists.
Yeah.
One of them did say I still didn't get it. And I was like, well, that's kind of rude. I don't think
you I think you should tell them that it doesn't exist. Like,
you don't need to tell me, I wouldn't have gotten it anyway. Like, that was a little. And then, yeah, I had time to sit on it and do nothing, because no entertainment was happening except for Zoom readings and stuff. So,
yeah. And like that, I know I only had a particular amount of bandwidth at that time. And so, like, even like I wanted to do a lot of Zoom theater, but I was like, I just feel so much grief in this moment that like I couldn't honor it, you know? But yeah, but then you then took a pivot and now you're pursuing law. So what was that journey like for you?
So I moved home during COVID because I was like, if I'm working a minimum wage job, I'm not paying rent. And so I was working at this restaurant, and then there was everything that happened that summer in the Twin Cities with George Floyd and all of that. And my mom and I went to the memorial, and I kind of had this moment where I think theater and escapism is so important for the world. And a lot of theater is for like change. But I started thinking, that's not what I wanted to do with theater. I wanted to create pure, just like funny stuff. Like, that's what I wanted to do. And I was thinking, how can I put good into the world? How can I do something that actually will affect things like this?
Yeah.
And every aptitude test I took in high school and middle school said I should be a lawyer. And so I was like, maybe I'll just take the LSAT and see. And so I took it that next spring, winter, spring. And I was hoping to either do really good or really terrible and have like a clear decision. And I did like pretty good. And I was like, oh, well, this doesn't help me. I guess I'll apply and see. And Drake had a really early application date. So I got that application in before like anything else. And as I think I applied to only two more schools and I got an acceptance from Drake, which also came with a pretty big scholarship. And I think that's part of the reason I ended up going, because I think if I had to take a loan out to go to law school when I still wasn't sure if that was what I wanted to do, that would have been a no-go.
Yeah.
So I FaceTimed my undergrad advisor. Because he was the one who really supported me in playwriting and all of that stuff. Yeah. Kind of cried to him. I'm like, what should I do? And he's like, I think it'd be a great experience, no matter what. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, I've always loved learning. But I do like law school. And I like what I'm... And I think it'd be nice to have a stable career. And then I can support the arts. I can go see the arts. I could even... My high school director was a lawyer. I could do stuff like that. I can still be involved.
And kind of like tracking back a little bit into the theater side of things. Mm-hmm. So you went to University of Minnesota. What was that program like?
It was some of the best times in my life, and I had some of the worst times in there too.
Yeah.
UMD has a really good theater program for like an affordable price. I don't know why I had to put that caveat on there.
That's okay. I think it's a well said caveat, because there are so many really expensive theater programs out there.
But like the staff there, I recently had one of my relatives, one of her students wants to go into theater, and she wanted to like ask me questions about UMD. And as I was typing out my answers and I was writing about the faculty, I almost started crying. I was like, because it was just like my advisor, Tom Isbell. He was so supportive as I was figuring myself out. And I had so many opportunities I didn't even know I wanted. Like, kind of this will come into like Kitty McCarthy and all that stuff. But I got to apply for an undergraduate research opportunity program to continue working on that. And so I got scholarship money for finishing that play. Also, the 10-minute play I wrote in playwriting got accepted to KCACTF. I didn't even know what KCACTF was before I applied for it. And so I got to go to that. And if you get accepted, like, the university pays for it. And normally it's, like, if a show goes. But, like, playwrights and, like, stage managers and stuff like that, if they get accepted, they also get paid to go. And so getting to do that, like, go to, I think it was in Sioux City when I went the two times. Go there for a week and get to see theater while you're there and take classes. Like, I didn't know that would even be an option. And
That's so special.
Yeah.
And it's really great to have those kinds of faculty because they end up being, like, the people who guide you as time goes on. Like you were saying with, like, with law school, like, you're like, I reached out to my advisor and you're like, help. Yes. And like, you weren't a student anymore, but like, those people really do pave a way in ways that we don't realize they can, which is so special as well.
I would also say UMD, in high school, I was known as the girl who I think got in the musicals. I could not dance. I was not a good dancer. Like, if I was in Thoroughly Modern Millie is like the one role that didn't have to tap. but I took a dance class like freshman year, like, because it was encouraged or whatever. I ended up taking a dance class like two a semester after that. Like, the dance teachers, aside from one I had issues with, were all amazing. And I ended up being like a solid dancer by the time I left. And that, I didn't think that was something that would happen. Honestly.
Yeah. Like, having teachers who are like actually like support and are helpful is as opposed to being like, oh, they can't, they'll never get it. Like, it's the time it takes is it's so important. And then of course, as we say, you say in your bio, you're a playwright. So what got you into like your playwriting class, for example?
I just decided to take it. I'd always kind of liked writing. I never really thought about it though. Like, in middle school I had like crappy little stories or whatever, but I hadn't really come back to it. And then I started doing taking the playwriting class with Tom, and he I don't know, he wrote Dear Finder, which is a play a lot of high school one acts do now, about the Holocaust. He's written two of the shows that ended up going to KCACTF and has gotten honored for those kind of stuff. So he's a playwright. Yeah. He knows what he's doing. But doing that class, having a really good time in that class. And then when I ended up submitting that 10-minute play and it got accepted, finding out, oh, I'm not bad at this. Like, cause I think it was like 6 plays out of 90 got accepted or something.
Wow. For the 10-minute plays.
And then applying for Europe and getting accepted for that and being like, oh, I'm okay at this. Like, having people be like, oh, could you write a short little 5-minute thing for our cabaret leading into our song? And being like, yeah. And writing for, we did an off-brand 24-hour plays in a day, writing for that and having people really enjoy the play I wrote. Like, I mean, positive feedback really is a good incentive.
Oh, absolutely.
So
definitely helps you keep going and on those kinds of fronts. But it's also funny because I think back to like talent show land and like theater camp and things like that. And I remember like you, Reed, and like someone else had done like a series of very, very short skits. And I thought they were hilarious. So I think it's so funny that I'm like, yes, this makes absolute sense. Yeah. Do you have any particular approach when you start writing something?
I write about something that like has been stuck in my head. My 10-minute play was, I had been driving and something happened. I should have crashed. It felt like I should have. Nothing bad happened. And I started thinking about all the times, you know, when you almost fall and you don't. And all these times when it felt like something bad should have happened and didn't. And I thought about just an overworked, at the end of her rope guardian angel, who just can't, is trying the best she can. And so that was the idea I had. And that ended up, it didn't end up being like the car crash or anything like that. But the idea of having two normal people and then their guardian angels having a conversation, and they obviously can't see them. That's where that idea came from. Kitty McCarthy, the idea came from, honestly, a lot of my real life, just a lot of funny things, like stories I've told that people have laughed about of this. We're told, like, from a young age, everyone, like, has a best friend on TV and movies and books. And I really set on that as a kid. It might have been because I was an only child.
Same.
Yeah. And I was like, I want this. And I kept, like, getting close calls. Like, I'd ask a girl, like, oh, we can be best friends, right? And she's like, oh, no, so-and-so is my best friend. So we can be good friends. Or this one guy said, well, you're a girl. You can't be my best friend. You mean my girl best friend. One girl said I could be her Minnesota best friend, but she already had a California best friend. It's like this comedy of like errors and sadness or whatever. Well, it's not really sad though, because and I started working on that when I still didn't feel like I had a best friend. I had good friends who I love and appreciate with all my heart. But then I found a best friend in college, and she told me, you need to rewrite the ending. You need to change it, and like, oh, some spoiler alert, she might find a best friend at the end.
She might, she might.
But it was a lot of funny stories that were from my life, but then altered to fit. So that one was a bit more personal than the other one.
But I like that though, where it's like something is stuck in your brain and you're like, I have to write about it. I think that speaks to a lot of people who are out there and write. Like, I'm sort of getting into it here and there, and I think that's a really great approach to it. It's like, what can I not get out of here, and what can I get on paper? Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of talked about this a little bit. Are there any particular like subjects or themes you enjoy writing about?
Well, I love comedy. I can't take myself seriously. I tried to write a serious like 10-minute thing once. Didn't care for it. I was done. And I like it to be a little bit fantastical, like the guardian angel play, like there's this little bit of heightened. In Kitty McCarthy, I like to say like the style of it is kind of like how I learned to drive, but less adult touching a kid.
Yeah.
but like this heightened, like we can switch to different locations whenever we want to.
Yeah.
My other one for plays in a day was about like two kids superheroes who are in over their head. And I like the bit of realism, you know, and then just finding something to like heighten it up a little bit, have a little fun with it.
So. Yeah, like get comfortable just enough and then be like, oh, this magical thing just happened and we're going to accept it. And everyone's like, okay, I guess we're along for the ride now. But no, I love that kind of style of playwriting. And then you've also done some producing. First of all, how would you describe what a producer does? Because quite honestly, every time someone describes it to me, it feels like a completely different job.
Well, I'm sure it's a bit different once you're like actually higher up and established.
Fair enough.
In my head, what I kind of thought of is a producer gets a bunch of talented people together to do something. Mm-hmm. For 24-hour plays, I was also the one who's in contact with 24-hour plays, making sure we had the licensing rights to do that. Then I made the info sheet. I had people submit their applications to me. I got the people, made sure they understood you need to be dedicated to this amount of time. Of course, we still had people drop out in the 11th hour.
Of course.
Brought my roommate Stuart in, who was not a UMD student, to act in the shows because we just needed one more actor. And it's being willing to be flexible and fix stuff. I got, this was a great idea from my, it wasn't my academic advisor. I had a specific producing like advisor for this who said, you know what, ask some of the music students if any of them have original works they want to play for like pre-show music and intermission music. I was like, that's just getting more people involved. And that's what I did for Kitty McCarthy too. I just contacted a bunch of my friends who I know are talented. And because of COVID, I knew no one really had anything going on at that point. And I brought them all together, and I'm the one who, like the stage manager was a lot of help. She found the venue, but then, like, I'm the one who's writing the checks to the venue and, like, the one who's posting the fundraising and all that kind of stuff. So it's, yeah, I stand by my statement. It's bringing talented people together to put a work on.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that has actually made more sense than what a lot of people have described to me. So I really like that. And now we've been talking about it, like dancing around it here and there, but you work to fully produce a show, Kitty McCarthy and the Neverending Quest for a Best Friend, which you also wrote. What was that like? What inspired you to not only write it, but also produce it yourself?
So yeah, I started it in the playwriting class. I then got funding to finish it, where I met with Tom like every other week to keep working on it. And that ended with a reading at the end of that year. I then kind of got pushed away because I think that was the end of junior year and senior year. I had a lot of going on. COVID hit and everyone was doing these Zoom readings. This wasn't a public reading, but I got some people I liked to read the parts for me on Zoom just to like go over it, do some edits and stuff. Because I had nothing else to do. Why not? Yeah. And then it started to get to be that summer after COVID, like going into it. And I knew I was going to law school in the fall at this point. And it's almost the same reason I chose to do the camp is I wanted to do some theater before I left. I contacted my production team first. I got a scenic designer, a costume designer, a stage manager, director, lighting designer, and a graphic designer slash master electrician. Lauren did both. I didn't have a sound designer. That's the one thing I was missing. But I got them together to agree that, yeah, let's do this. We have nothing else to do. Initially, we were going to do it as part of a Fringe Festival, and then there was a little confusion about dates, and we're like, okay, we're just doing this on our own.
Yeah.
And then we did auditions. Also, we reached out to some people because we wanted to, like, oh, let's let people audition. Had maybe three people audition. We're like, let's reach out to people we know.
Yeah.
Got some really talented people in the cast. There is a part who's like a mother, and so we're searching, like, because we don't know many older actresses like at this point. Like, we knew some in Duluth, but this was in the Twin Cities. And then our lead actress's mother auditioned for it, and so that worked out because she was playing the mother of her actual daughter.
I love that.
That was really sweet. And then yeah, we had to book the, they settled their rehearsals. I tried to go to as many of the rehearsals as I could, but I also, it's not good as a playwright always to hover too much.
Constantly be in the room, yeah.
Which is also why I didn't direct. I was like, I can't direct something I wrote. And then I also connected, I did this local late night call-in show in high school. And I contacted them about renting video equipment for the show. So finally we're in the space, we recorded it. It was basically all the way through. We had to we stopped for like kind of an intermission-y thing, but there's no intermission in the actual show. And then we had to stop at one point in the second act because some set piece, something happened. But I basically got to see it done, which was really exciting. My mom came and watched it live.
Oh, she loved that.
And then our ASM guy edited it, and I had to let go of my control for that. And I deep breaths, let him do it, and we uploaded on a YouTube premiere, and like it's still up there. Like it was just a premiere watching. And there were things that could have been done better. Like we did this very hapdash, but I think everyone worked really hard on it, and we put together some theater during still basically the pandemic, and we were all I think really proud of what we ended up with.
Absolutely. And I do have a little clip from it. I'm just pulling a little taste of the beginning just so people can get a taste for Kitty McCarthy and how this goes. So we'll just watch a little bit of it.
Did you see where Tabby or Jessica went?
I think they left already. They rushed the orchestra and choir up pretty quickly after the ceremony.
Shoot, I wanted a picture with them.
You'll see them again, you know.
I know. What?
just so proud of you.
Mom. Oh. Like there was ever any guess.
My little baby. Is that Opal? Opal!
What are you doing?
I get to get a picture of you and Jackson.
Mom, Jack and I haven't spoken in years.
It's not like you parted on bad terms or anything. Besides, I know Opal would appreciate a picture of the two of you as well.
Oh, it's so good to see you.
Oh, this crowd is terrible. Yeah.
You would think a stadium would be able to hold 400 kids.
And their relatives.
Oh, look at you, all grown up. Why, I remember when you and Jackson used to play in the backyard. Oh, you remember, right, kids?
Oh, God. Now, I want a picture of you two.
Oh, now that would be absolutely perfect.
Oh, you'll send it to me, won't you?
Of course, of course. Now, smush together. Smush together, you two. Oh, hold on.
You have to tap. You have to tap on our faces for it to focus, Mom.
Here, let me.
Jack was the first person I ever considered my best friend.
And I'll stop it right there. I think that gives you a nice little taste of what the play is going to be like. And if you want to watch the full thing, I will link the full video down below in the description once we are done going live here. But no, it's so fun. I love the Minnesotan accent that Opal has. I'm like, this is quintessential.
That's Rachel Williams. She was Opal. She's also several characters. Like, she steals the show at several times.
I can imagine.
She's a really good actress.
Yeah, no, it looks like such a blast. And also to, like, because when, what timeline here, like, where or when was this produced and recorded?
It was the summer of 2021. So we're in 2022 right now.
Yes.
I think we had like, I'm going to mess this up, like 7 rehearsals, I think, before it was recorded. And yeah, we recorded it, I want to say beginning of August, and like put it out around then. No, I was very mean and I added an extra monologue for Miranda in the like 11th hour. And so I told her, you don't have to memorize it. We'll shoot it separately. I just need to put this in here.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, no, because I was thinking, I'm like, in the timeline of things, like, that's still like fresh after vaccines first started coming out and things like that, but still like practicing theater in a room without masks, it's still nerve-wracking, but I can imagine how special it was to be able to like get to work on a full-length piece like that.
That was Addy, who was our director. He asked everyone at the beginning. He's like, if you want us to wear masks, please let us know. Everyone seemed pretty comfortable not. I think everyone wore masks at their day jobs.
Yes.
And didn't really see people outside of that. So it worked. It ended. I'm glad everyone was comfortable with it. If it wasn't, we could have worn masks. It would have been fine. But
yeah, exactly. And I have a few little Instagram questions. We have a loyal viewer at ChrisXC34. He submitted a few. First one is, Kitty is sometimes a nickname for Catherine. Is your play autobiographical?
A little bit. Kitty was actually the name. It was like an undergrad. And I said, if I was a bitch, I'd go by Kitty. which Kitty isn't in the play. It's kind of a fun name. I wanted it to give her a name that was like, almost like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or whatever, like a name that exists, but isn't like super, you don't hear people called Kitty or like Buffy that often.
Right.
So I don't have any friends who really call me Kitty unless as a joke. But it is a bit out of, there's a lot of like truth in the stories. I remember the girl who's playing kind of the mean girl in it, asked me one day, she's like, listen, this character says this thing. I just can't imagine anyone saying it in real life. And I had to go, well, she did.
She did it. Like, I do have that personal experience.
I understand your concerns though. It does sound crazy. Like no one should say that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. People say some wild things, but no, thank you for answering that. And then also, Chris says, how did you come up with the Kitty's psyche scene?
Oh, did he watch it?
Awesome. I guess so, because I haven't been able to get all the way through just yet. But yeah, no, loyal viewer here.
That was, I kind of needed just a thing at the end, and I was talking with my advisor, and it just seemed like a wild thing. It's the heightened magical thing that I like to do. Basically, at the very end, she has like a game show on in her head where the MC is interviewing three of her friends and asking them questions about Kitty. And he tries to trip him up at the end by being like, "Who's Kitty's best friend?" And they're all like, But it was supposed to be just something fun and magical a little bit in there.
Yeah. Something to get to those, like a more fun, unique way to get to those points that you want to get across. Yeah. And so had you ever, I mean, you were talking about the 24-hour play festival. So that was one thing you had produced prior to this. Had you produced anything else? And also, what was the difference between like Kitty McCarthy and like 24-hour play festival?
I hadn't quite produced anything else. I think there was a lot of transferable skills from like working with kids, even like doing those camps. Cause in those I would like do everything for the show, you know, like choose the costumes for the kids, choose, the directing, all that.
Yeah.
24 hour plays was different because it was so much build up, and then it was just the 24 hours and you just had to keep going. This one, I always knew 24 hour plays was going to happen. This one, it might have just taken one person giving me a hard no, and it might not have happened. Because it wasn't like, after a while, we would have run out of actors to ask, you know, like, or it could have been, I mean, I think I could have done a bad job of costume design if my friend Tasha hadn't come in. but if I hadn't had a director, I don't know what I would have done. If I hadn't been able to get those video cameras, would we have recorded it on our phone?
Getting the venue,
if that hadn't happened. And if, like, the fundraising worked out, we got enough money to be able to afford everything we needed to, would have had to have been in like my basement or whatever. And like, we would have still done it, I guess. But it was all a lot of luck and a lot of the kindness of friends and family and just everyone's passion to do something that I think made it happen.
That's so special. And I love that. And I think that's a really like interesting comparison to look at, because you're like, look, the 24-hour like play festival, it's on the books. Like, it is a thing that's happening. There's a deadline here. Whereas this other one, it's like, we're just going to keep asking. And then if it can happen, then great. But you're like, it might come to an end at any point. Who knows? But then that just makes the whole process more rewarding by the end, I'm sure. And then we were talking about this earlier, obviously. Currently, you are a law student. So how far into your program are you?
I'm in my 1L year, it's 3-year program. I am halfway through my second semester because we're at spring break right now. So
how's that going?
I've always loved to learn. I've always, I'm a little bookworm, love class, love learning. I get irritated when the person next to me isn't paying attention. But I really like it. I did well the first semester. It's all graded on a curve. So you may feel good about how you did in the final, but if everyone else did better, you might be getting that C+.
Yeah.
So I didn't know until I got my grades and I was like, oh, I did well. I'm doing good. I made some friends. I know I want to come back to Minnesota cause I'm in Iowa right now. But I think I can handle, I think I'll make it through the next 2.25 years or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I know you still have a fair amount of your program to get through, but do you have any idea of like what area you would want to go into with law?
I'm really open right now. I've really firmly checked off. I don't want to do insurance law. I learned that.
Fair enough.
But I'm kind of right now, the two things that are really drawing my attention are entertainment law. Cause I have the background in entertainment. Right. And then also I really did like criminal law. Which seems to me, it felt like a no brainer. Cause that's what people all really know. In class, not a lot of people want to do criminal law. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's just this program specifically, or if it is, it might not be as attractive to some people. A lot of people want to do civil litigation or not litigation at all. They want to be the people behind the scenes, transactional law. Mm. I don't really know. I'll take any internship I can get this summer. I just want to see what I can do. And I know I want to help people no matter what. I'd like to do like public interest and pro bono, either as a main thing or as something on the side. So
yeah, that's really awesome to hear. Cause I know sometimes certain law programs can get so cutthroat that people are just there for specific things and they're not always the greatest, but that's really awesome to hear that like, that you're wanting to do this to help people. And I think we just need more of that. Like, I know that's like a really cliche thing to say, but like, we just need more of that kind of stuff, you know? Yes. And I'd love to draw some connections between law and theater here, because I was mentioning this to you earlier, but I did this with a previous guest, Dan Smith, who's also a law student. Both of you have gotten your hands into producing, and there's so many plays, stories, etc., that are set in law settings, be it law school, a courtroom, a jury debating room. Why do we think that is?
It is. This last week, we have our trial practicum where we get to sit in on a trial from like beginning to end.
Wow.
And there is some element of, we saw the prosecutor talking and the defense attorney talking to the judge before the jurors showed up. They were just doing some pretrial motions. The jury shows up for jury selection, and I saw the prosecutor fully switch how he was presenting himself. It was a performance right away, mm-hmm. How he was talking. Because at jury selection, you're trying to convince them, not that liking a lawyer will make you side with one party or the other, but it'll help no matter what. And yeah. He's automatically being charming, and he memorized every person's name to like call on them. And like, it was a performance. Like there was parts throughout this, the show I was about to say.
Throughout the show.
Trial that was a show. And you need to know how to tell a story. Like the order you bring the witnesses in, that's telling a story. Your mm-hmm. closing argument is definitely a story. Seeing how they decide to lay that out. And I think that also goes with producing. You're not only starring in this show you're putting on, you're fully putting it on.
Yeah. Presenting your evidence in a certain way.
Yeah, your evidence is your scenic design, your witnesses, your actors and actresses might not do what you want them to do. But even behind the scenes, you're still appealing to people. Like even, you still have to put everything together and plan how all this evidence, all this prior law comes together for something to happen. And I do think theater prepared me somewhat, it's pretty well for that. Like, I was even told by one of the admissions people, she was like, are the people who best adjust to the workload of law school are theater and music students. Because
that's so interesting.
And it's not necessarily that they're better equipped for the work itself, but they're used to having school and then rehearsal from like 6 to 10.
That's true. Well,
now I have rehearsal from 6 to 10. I feel like I have free time honestly in law school. But I was used to like committing that much time to what I was doing. Not right. necessarily that I'd be better at what it was, but I was used to the time frame. Whether job applications will know that by just looking at me saying I have a theater background.
Yes. To be determined, but.
There's a lot. There is theater in law, though less than what TV and movies would say. It's a bit less entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Well, because like obviously we always think of like Legally Blonde, Elle Woods. But even like I did a production of 12 Angry Jurors where it like all takes place in like the jury debating room and like. Again, it's the telling the story and evidence coming out in certain times. And I think that definitely plays right into that hand. But I think it's also so cool that like you and my friend Dan from the previous episode both got your hands into playwriting and producing your own things as well. And I think that comes with what you were saying about producing, getting all these really talented people together to do a thing. There must be some type of similar situation with law, as you were saying, with like, you are the star of the show, but you're running it in terms of like putting together all your evidence and things mm-hmm. like that. I just think that's so fascinating to me. But yeah, with that, we're kind of nearing the end of this episode, which is really exciting. And it's been so much fun to get to talk to you and catch up. Yeah. Where can people find you like on the internet if they wanted to contact you?
I'm pretty sure my Facebook is open to messages, Catherine Duclo. I definitely, my phone doesn't always notify about non-friend ones, but eventually I see them. You know, you sometimes see some sketchy ones in there.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, beautiful. And you're like,
Well, it'll just say like message requests, like really, really tiny up in a corner. Yeah. And you're like, what's that?
Same with Instagram, at Duclo, a mispronunciation of my name that someone once did and I stuck with. And then I guess, my email also, I can send that to you because I don't necessarily, spelling that out might be a bit odd.
That's totally fine.
But yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we're wishing you the best on all things law school and beyond. I know you're still going to throw yourself into theater wherever you can because I know you. But yeah, in terms of like my social medias and things like that, you can find me on Instagram at @Laura_Marjoram. Website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show on Instagram at Overtures Show. There's two S's, but it's right, I promise. And then if you're watching this episode, congrats. You found the YouTube. You're here. Feel free to give us a follow, a like, all the subscribe. What's all the things for YouTube? I truly don't remember anymore. But yeah, support the stream wherever you can. I have not announced this on the Instagram yet, but next stream will be Wednesday the 16th at 7:30 p.m. with my good friend Anna Sorrentino, a costume designer that I went to grad school with. But yeah, Catherine, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Oh,
I know that's so broad. I apologize.
This is gonna sound real weird. Don't be afraid to give up on some dreams. maybe your first dream doesn't quite work with how you want to live your life, and that's okay. And then you can adjust your dream and don't feel any shame about that. Cause there's a lot of people who are like, if you give up, you've given up on yourself. You've given up. No, you can find happiness with so many different dreams and be willing to try other things.
Absolutely. And that's a nugget of gold right there. So thank you for bringing that into this virtual space. But yeah, with that, thank you so much. And thanks to people watching. And we will see you later. Bye.